Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are after a one-week hiatus because Andrew is back from the Far East.
From the Far East, yeah. Yeah, it seems like forever, doesn't it?
Well, I'm surprised these trips are so short.
This was, you know, I was talking about on the way home, this trip was about, I think, about 2 days or so shorter than my usual trips. And the people we travel with had to get back, so we just scurried around quickly. It was enough, though. Although, it's funny, you get there, and I guess maybe the adrenaline of a vacation, you know, even though you're 12 hours on the other side, when I landed in Seoul, yeah, you're just ready to rock, ready to go. And then just...
Not everybody's that way, by the way.
Well, and then on the way back, you know, kind of tired, sleep on the plane as much as possible. And then Monday comes, I got back Sunday night late, Monday comes and I'm fine. I'm just fine till about 11:30 in the morning. And then I'm like, I can't see straight. You know, you know, and then I'm fine. And then I woke up this morning at about 4:30.
Oh, yeah, that's the classic.
Woke up at 4:30. I'm like, oh, what to do. So kind of tried to go back to sleep a bit, came to the office early. And about 11:30 again, I'm like, oh, my, you know. So and then I actually at about 5:30, I went home. I said, I need to take a nap. So I slept from 5:30 to 7 tonight. It's exhausting. Hmm. But it was a good trip. A lot of
fun. Sounds like it. What'd you learn?
What did I learn? I learned a lot about soju and beer. Soju is the, I guess, a rice wine of sort. It's about a 20 to a 24% alcohol.
Yeah.
And when you, I learned a lot of the Korean beer drinking games online, the bottle cap game, the chopsticks and hit the table game where the soju shot goes into the glass and you get like a sake bomb, the four shots lined up in a row. So I kind of perfected those. But
jeez,
too much soju, I must tell you, because it goes down so easily, is like a bit of a mind eraser.
Mm.
But it's very good. Learned about the Norebang, which is the private room karaoke's in Korea. That was really a lot of fun.
What was special about those?
They were just unbelievable sound systems in these rooms, private rooms. You know, you pay about $20 an hour, and they have lights and they have these gigantic screens, multiple screens, so you can look in either direction and sing along. And a book that must have been, what is that, maybe 8 inches thick of song choices. Now, part of those are in Japanese, part are in Korean, but a good chunk of songs in English. And they bring you beer and they bring you snacks and they bring you soju and you just sing all like crazy. And I also learned that I can't sing.
I think we knew that.
Yeah, very bad voice. And I learned about chicken and beer. A lot of beer. I think was there beer in each one of those comments so far, what I learned?
Yeah, a lot of mentions of some sort of alcoholic beverage.
So I had, I've heard so much about the Korean fried chicken. It's just unbelievable. There's 3,000 different recipes and whatever. So I finally find a place to get some fried chicken. I go in and we eat. I'm like, this is not, it's like chicken wings. It's they put a little sauce on some fried chicken. It's not so great.
Let me guess the punchline.
What's the punchline?
You were eating rat.
No.
Oh.
Well, fast forward a few days. And I said, all right, let me order the chicken again. So I order the chicken. I'm like, oh my, now that is good chicken. They double fry it. They fry it first with a very thin batter. It's dark meat. First at 340 degrees in the oil, then at 375.
It's like double fried French fries.
It was so good. So delicious. Mm. The prices in Korea, much higher than anywhere else in Asia that I've been to, besides, let's say, Japan. And, I mean, a hamburger at the hotel was $28. Not terrible for a hotel, but still.
It sounds like a ripoff.
Yeah, beers were $5 anywhere you go. Whereas, fast forward a couple of days in China, I got three beers for $1.25.
China's dirt cheap.
Oh, ridiculous. But Korean barbecue is unbelievable. As a matter of fact, I have some pictures on the site over on DH Unplugged, episode number, 419. I put a couple of pictures on there. I actually found and I searched out the restaurant that Anthony Bourdain went on his 24 drunken hours, drunken soaked or alcohol soaked hours in Seoul. And I found this little Korean barbecue. You've had Korean barbecue, right?
Yeah.
You know where they put the exhaust fan over the center of the table and they put charcoal there and you cook right on the table there.
Sure. We have those actually in California.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. It's hard to find here. I found one. But I got to tell you something. I was at a few different barbecue places. I had black pork. I had all sorts of different porks and beef and marinated and plain. The one that Anthony Bourdain went to, this little place that was just nothing. It was a nothing place. There was nobody there. Walk in and it was fantastic. Absolutely the best barbecue we had. I have a picture there for you.
Well, next time I go to Korea, I'll go to this place.
Yes, this was very good. This is very good. But look at the pictures, too. There's one with...
I see one with your head in the front of it.
Yeah, it's the old Korean selfie there. And then the second one, though, look at... You see how they put you see that ring around? This is the only place I saw this. They put this... There's a ring around the barbecue plate.
Yeah.
They load that with egg. So you make like a scrambled egg as you're eating.
So it makes an egg thing. Yeah, see that. That's very interesting.
Really good.
I haven't seen that.
Yeah, really good. What else here? I stayed at probably the finest hotel that I've ever stayed at in Shanghai. I had the upper suite at the Waldorf Astoria.
I'm sure. Well, a lot of hotels in Shanghai are pretty spectacular.
Yeah, this was nice. Shanghai was fun. It was hot. It was so hot.
Yeah, it's too bad because it's miserable when it's hot.
Oh, hot, hot. And there's, might I say, you know this, but there are a lot of people there. I mean, there are a lot of people there. It was, you know, going across the Bund, which is where you look over and see the skyline of Shanghai at night and all that. It was like a sea of people walking down the street. It made Times Square look ridiculous.
Oh, there's no comparison.
Yeah. Amazing. I also learned one other thing I'll mention. Well, besides taxis are very cheap everywhere. Very, very inexpensive. They don't have Uber and all that. Everybody in China seems to be paying digitally with either Alipay or WeChat Pay.
That's a recent change.
So everywhere you are, aside from me with my fumbling to try to calculate.
I think if you got out of Shanghai, I don't think this would be the case.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Huh.
I also took the high-speed train from the airport.
Yeah, I have not been on that. It's supposed to be spectacular.
300K per hour.
Yeah.
So that was about 180 miles an hour. That was a great ride. Smooth.
It's a maglev.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. That's what it's called. It's called a maglev. That's the actual name of it. It says maglev.
That's what it is.
Yeah. Was that a magnetic levitating? Is that what it stands for?
Yeah, it's magnetically held in the air.
Yeah. So that was good. Had some good food there. Good times in there. Went to some cooking classes throughout. Went to some interesting sites.
No, that's a good idea.
Yeah, it was very nice. Very, very nice. So meanwhile, the markets, as I was gone, moved kind of sideways. A little bit down. Had about 4 days down during the period when I was there. I had some interesting discussions, by the way, also about, you know, hey, what do you think about America? Oh, you want to hear something interesting? So I was in China and I said, so what do you think about, America and our politics? Said, oh, this is just a couple of people. So it's not a scientific study. Said, oh, we're very happy that Trump is president. I'm like, well, what do you mean by that? Well, a lot of our friends in America who are Chinese all voted for Trump. I said, really? Why is that? Because Trump promised to close the borders and that wouldn't allow any of the people, a lot of immigration in to keep it safe.
So interesting.
Really interesting.
That may be a wider spread thought than you think.
Yeah, but I never even thought of that. You know, you think the Chinese would be like, no, we don't want it. We want to come to America. I guess they figure they can come, but they keep out the undesirables.
Yeah, I'm sure that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Because they use chain migration techniques.
Right. Didn't we just
open up a Chinese restaurant, they bring a bunch of relatives in, and then they, you know, work the system. But they do it, you know, pretty legitimately. They're just not sneaking in the cargo containers.
Right. Yeah, it was, I thought it was really interesting. They were pretty happy about that. They were, I also asked, I said, what do you think about how some of your, because when I took one of these Wi-Fi units that I got, actually from San Francisco, the place sent it to me. Great little unit. And it was unlimited. It cost me like $10 a day. Unlimited Wi-Fi, wherever I go, the battery lasted all day. So everywhere I'm at, I had Wi-Fi. And so I could use Skype. I could use, do whatever I want to do. And but in China, as soon as I got there, it kind of started getting weird on me. Like you can't get Google. You can't get Gmail. Can't get Twitter. Can't get Facebook. It's all blocked.
Yeah, it's about time.
Yeah.
When I first went to China years and years and years ago, you could get, everything was open. You could get onto anything. Then I kept hearing and I noticing, I don't use a lot of these things when I'm traveling anyways, my email. And I have my own servers, or I use servers provided by CTime. So I never noticed that they were starting to do that. I guess they've been doing it for quite a while.
Yeah. So, yeah. Anyway, it was a great trip. Very nice, like I said, but hot. I mean, I got there, it was 100 degrees. It was brutal. Jeju Island was also very nice. Little island off of the coast of South Korea. Spent a couple of days there. And it was fun. Oh, one more thing. I went to the casino. Koreans are not allowed. They're banned. It's illegal to gamble. Okay. Now, it says something.
It's the same. You know, it's the same thing in Monaco.
Yeah, same thing in China. That's why they have to go to Macau. But what we read was that Koreans are prohibited for gambling anywhere in the world, which I don't know how they, this is something we read, but okay, forget about that. They were definitely prohibited from gambling in Korea. So we go into the casino. There is not a person in this casino. There was one casino. It was a nice casino. It was pretty big. Not even a person playing the slots. There was nobody. So we sat down at a table. And you got to get like 1,000 and 10,000 won chips. You know, and I'm playing, and every time I'm playing it, now 1,000 won is $10. So I'm putting down $10, but it has 1,000 on it. So I'm like, I can't even play the $1,000 chip because I kept on seeing 1,000 on it. You know, I couldn't get
psychologically
it in my head.
Blocked.
Yeah, I couldn't get it in my head. It was only $10. So like I'd win a couple of hands, and usually, you know, process where you win a little, you put a little bit up, put a little bit more up, you know, you leverage up and all that. I could barely put the secondary chip on. You know what I'm saying?
It's like, funny.
I can't do it. But it was kind of interesting that went on. So anyway, markets moved sideways over the week. We saw that they were digesting earnings and the potential for a trade war impact. The Turkish lira imploded. It was sanctions were added. So the lira was getting crushed, I think, last Friday.
Yep.
Last week, the lira itself, last week or so, the lira was down like 30%. And on top of that, just when the lira really started getting going in a bad way, President Trump took his shoe and put it right on the neck of Turkey, right when they were down, and said, you know what, we're going to add some more sanctions now until this pastor Andrew Brunson is released. He's held on charges of terror and terrorist and espionage or something.
Yeah.
So got the shoe heel right to the throat, and the Turkish lira collapsed even further. I have a chart here from the beginning of the year until now. The Turkish lira is down 80%. It was up a little bit today. It bounced about 8% today. But look at this. This is an unbelievable move. And really in August is when it really started moving. It went from 5 to 7. That's a 50% move right there.
Yeah.
But that's what you call a currency collapse right there, folks.
Yeah, I don't know what they're going to do about it.
Well, I mean, first of all,
these things linger when they get down there. They have to do reverse splits and stuff.
They're going to have to. Well, the problem is that the thing that we're all worried about right now, and the thing you're starting to hear is the potential, if this thing continues, of capital controls. Which is very bad, which is where you have they put on controls in Turkey where.
Yeah, you can't go to the bank.
Can't go to the bank. Foreign investments are restricted, restricting currency flows, possibly restricting the amount of money you could take out of an ATM, non-use of cash. And then what that all yields is very simply a bank run, which then causes more problems. Then they have to boost the interest rates up to try to hold the money. Because now if they boost interest rates to 30 or 40%, you got some players that are like, okay, well, I'll buy that. I'll take that risk. But this is a problem because once you put the currency controls or the capital controls on, then you start getting widespread fear and panic. And it usually spreads from there.
Do you think they're not going to do that? Because that might look at this every time I see something like this. They always do that for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's possible that if it gets much how much worse can it get, right? But if it gets much worse, that they may do something like that. Right now, Erdogan is now, he's trying to fight back. He's saying they're going to boycott or, you know, prohibit iPhones from coming in.
Yeah, that was a good one.
And kind of turning around, trying to, you know, keep his chest up and but it's a big problem. I don't think, unfortunately, his personality, from what I can see, will just say, okay, you know what? Okay. Let me release this guy and then just get off our backs. I don't know if he's going to do that. This Brunson.
Well, he should, but it seems as though he may have a lot of pride and it would hurt him politically. Maybe he'd think that. And so he won't.
Yeah, but if he doesn't, it's going to hurt him politically due to the fact that people will lose a lot of money.
He's going to have to figure something out. I think they're either going to have to shoot the guy.
Uh-oh.
Not Erdogan, but the prisoner.
Oh, how does that play? Oh, then you don't have to give him back.
You don't have to give him back. Or they can trump up some way of getting him out, saying, oh, he shouldn't have been locked up in the first place. He's going to have to come up with something to save face.
Oh, maybe some kind of like a backdoor escape plan.
Yeah. So he's escaped.
Yeah.
Those rotten bastards that got him out somehow.
Right. And then we don't have any of those problems anymore. I don't know. Now there's no confidence in the government's ability to provide anything. The central bank stepped in. But Erdogan is not, he's not playing ball. Let's just put it that way. Now this is also a problem because this whole move of currencies, especially the move of the dollar, due to the fact that the U.S. economy is the strongest compared to everybody else right now. The central bank, our Fed, is raising rates or talking about raising rates. This took down the ETF for the emerging markets 19% since its high in 2018.
No. Well, that's interesting.
Turkey's ETF is now at 2009 lows. So the question then also remains is...
Well, the question in our minds is it a buying opportunity?
Well, is it a buying opportunity, which I bought some turkey, not sliced turkey, but the turkey ETF.
I bought some turkey too.
I bought a pound of turkey to try to prop it all up, you know? But I bought some turkey yesterday for a quick trade, made 11% on it. And that's this is symbol TUR is the ETF that's turkey. Now, of course... One of the big things about that is that's the equity markets of Turkey, but also it has all the impact of currencies on it because it's traded in Turkish lira or it's converted to Turkish lira. So if you want to play the currency, you can play the currency and the Turkish stock market with symbol TUR at 2009 lows. But the bigger question, my friend, is how long can the U.S. remain immune from the potential of any contagion that we're seeing, because as much as we want to believe that we are isolated and we have a moat around us and there's really a kind of a economic wall that surrounds us and protects us due to good earnings, good economics, the capital structure here with taxes, we're still a global economy, and there is the potential for some contagion if things still keep going awry with this. Not to mention the fact, a very simple discussion of how much outstanding debt is owned by U.S. banks, European banks, and others in corporate bonds of Turkey and government bonds of Turkey.
Well, that issue is something different. I'm wondering... I don't think Turkey has enough leverage to really hurt our economy, but the potential for a domino effect, taking out parts of Europe or something and making it stress us.
Yeah.
They're also not that connected to China, which is one of the few economies that could stress us, along with, especially combined with the Japanese. I just don't see it's a risk.
I don't see Turkey itself being a risk either. However, one of the things that is consistent with what's going on here is that as the dollar rises, it makes it much more difficult for those other countries that have been issuing dollar-denominated bonds of their country's corporations. You know, there's a lot of dollar-denominated notes that are out there, lots. You know, because it's much more palatable for people to buy, hey, yeah, we got to buy the dollar-denominated ones, right? Because then we don't have so much of a risk. So we'll buy the dollar-denominated bond of XYZ company in Turkey or XYZ. We'll buy dollar-denominated Turkish bonds of any sort. The problem is paying those back when your currency drops 80% is a problem. So now,
yes, especially if it's dollar denominated, you can never pay him back.
Right. And there's been,
but maybe that is the idea. I mean, if you read the book, The Economic, you know, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, that's the real goal in life seems to be to do this to certain economies. And so you end up pretty much owning them.
Right. Exactly. But the problem becomes that if you have the amount of bonds that have been issued over the last, let's call it, 7 or 8 years in dollar denominations is exorbitant. And if you can't have that paid back and you have those on the books of your banks that have been buying bonds because they, you know, everybody's, you know, searching for yield. So they looked outside and they're looking for this. It's just a big problem. It's a big problem.
It is, but it's just like, what were you thinking?
Well, they're not thinking anything like, hey, we're just reaching for yield. And everybody was just happy-pappy. Figuring, okay, let's just buy everything, because individual investors are very much looking at, okay, what's the yield on this? What's the return on this? And they're looking short term. They're not looking long term. And they say, wait, this bond fund has a 7% yield. This one has a 4% yield. The 4% yield maybe has more structurally sound fixed income instruments inside of it. Yet the other one, you know, oh, it has, look at all the different sovereigns it has.
It's yeah, so what good. Can go wrong? Yeah, so it's all wrong? In Turkey.
Right.
Yeah.
But then we have Argentina. Argentina just raised their 7-day rate 500 basis points to 45%.
Yeah. Well, Argentina and Turkey are both very similar economies. I think the difference in GDP is around 200 billion, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, they're not big. These are not big.
No, they're not big. And they're not, and they don't take anything down with them because they're not big. But I guess the accumulation of these guys would be a problem.
Yep.
Now you have, only kept, yeah, you have Venezuela's collapse.
It's so gone. That's gone.
You got three.
Right. That needs to do like a major reverse split. The whole country.
Oh, they should just sell off the country to foreign interests.
Ah. And then you have the Indian rupee. Now, this is no small issue. India is a large country.
No, that is India's large.
The rupee is at a historic low against the dollar. The rupee. So there's some problems here. And the central bank here, the Fed, is responsible for this. Now, I'm not blaming them necessarily. Oh, look at the bad. They're doing what they should be doing for the U.S. in light of the fact that our economy is doing well, our employment is low. La-da-da-da-da, all this good stuff, right? You don't want runaway inflation, all that. And the problem, if you think about this, what's going on, the lack of the reinvestment in bonds and the buying of bonds and the drawing down liquidity and raising interest rates and the dollar going higher is a major problem for the rest of the world. And no wonder why, if you really back up for a second and you think about why has the Fed been so slow to raise rates considering all the things that are going on in the U.S., because of the interconnectedness of the rest of the world and how this really drives significant amount of there's so much leverage that is driving so much of the markets, leverage in the form of fixed income and low interest rates, and tied to the dollar. I mean, it's just a mess. Just a mess.
Well, as long as you've been doing this show, it's been a mess most of the time. I'm looking at the dollar now. It is down to a nice $1.13 against the euro, which just seems to be more like it. 111 against the the yen. And $1.27 against the British pound, which is extremely low when it's traditionally around $1.50, $1.60.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably not a bad time to go traveling.
Yeah, I agree with that, especially in Europe.
Yeah, Europe's got to be right now. It's going to be right now is the ideal time to get over there.
Get right over to the islands over to Portugal. Now, the economic, there's been some economic updates also. The Congressional Budget Office has lowered its forecast for U.S. economic growth for this year and warned of increasing uncertainty from American plans to widen tariffs. And they are now saying that the economy is expected to expand at 3.1% this year, which is still respectable. That's, you know, 3%. I'll take it in a developed market from the previous forecasted April of 3.3%. And then they're also projecting that 2019 is going to drop to 2.4%.
Mm.
And some of that has to do with the slowing growth in business investment and government purchases.
Who's they? Where's these numbers coming from?
The CBO, Congressional Budget Office, a nonpartisan party grouping, think tank, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Now, today we saw import and export prices come out. This is something that I'm watching. You know, I told you I'm going to watch what's going on with pricing here to see if there's going to be any margin compression potential, which we did see also from the report from Home Depot today. Home Depot came out with a stellar number. Excellent beat, did all the stuff they're supposed to do. But in their conference call, they warned about higher prices that they're paying and margins compressing a bit. And this is probably due to the fact that even though the strong dollar has helped companies here buy products from overseas, there's some, you know, the tariffs are adding all sorts of problems. So the rate of import inflation over the last 12 months climbed 4.8%, even with the dollar moving higher. That's the highest rate since February 2012.
What does this mean?
A lot of it had to do with oil. It just means that import prices are picking up. That means inflation is picking up. That means that you and I are going to somehow get stuck with paying more for whatever we buy.
Yeah.
Again. Again. You have a
yes.
You have an air conditioner blowing on you or something?
No. Why is it? Like, you got a noise? No. There's no noise in here at all.
Slight whistle. Slight hiss.
I don't know what that is.
I'll take that out. Okay. Let's get
it. Don't worry about it. It could be the traffic maybe going through, coming through the window. Maybe I'm not sure.
You have traffic coming through your window?
Yeah. Windows. There's a car going by right now.
Ah.
In the back. It's not actually going downstairs.
The traffic's not actually coming through your window though.
No. The sound of the traffic.
Sound of the traffic's coming through your window. Yeah. All right. Just checking. I was thinking maybe you're collecting tolls. I was really going to be impressed.
That would be great.
Right through your window. Just you're handing out tickets as we're talking here. Tesla. You want to talk about Tesla?
If you want to talk about Tesla, I'll talk about Tesla.
This is getting bizarre.
It's been bizarre for quite a while, I think.
Yeah. This tweet where he said that he looking to take the company private for $420 a share, which is unbelievable, by the way. That the first part of that, I don't know if that has to do with the 420 for weed.
Yeah, I've always, but yeah, 420 is kind of a gag, maybe you think. It's a joke. He's just talking about pot.
Maybe. But he says on Twitter, out of the blue, out of nowhere, looking to take the company private or go a private transaction for $420 a share dash funding secured.
Sure it is.
This is like Twitter magic. Because stock goes up 10% on this.
The SEC is looking into this, by the way.
They should. I mean, they should. First of all, public information dissemination of something like this that nobody seemed to know about besides Elon Musk. Nobody anywhere is disseminated through Twitter, and that's questionable. Second of all, it seems as though the funding secured, which I don't know how you interpret that any other way than he's got the money and the backing just looking to do the deal. I mean, is there any other way to look at this?
Nope.
I mean, you're not saying that funding pending, funding.
No.
Nothing, right? Looking to secure funding.
Funding a bail. Yeah, funding available, funding a done deal. I mean, there's a million ways of looking at it. And the thing is, of course, that when any normal person looks at this, and especially when you're looking at stock buybacks, mm-hmm. generally speaking, this is not a stock buyback. This is a complete corporate buyout. Stock buybacks are done for the reasons you're always complaining about.
Grousing.
Which is just to limit the number of shares so your earnings per share look better. But this is a complete buyback. Why would you buy? And when this is done, it's usually like when Michael Dell bought back Dell. It was done as a fire sale. The stock was depressed. It wasn't performing well. He had issues with the, you know, the way it was going to go if they kept being a public company. So he bought back cheap. You don't buy back at the top dollar.
And usually when you do these buyouts, it's a company that has debt that's manageable, that has free cash flow, that can pay down, you know, they lever it up even more. Oftentimes these private equity deals, they lever it up, they have cash to pay it off, they figure out a way to streamline the operation, blah, 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 blah. This is massively in the hole debt-wise.
Yeah.
No free, you know, no positive cash flow from the deal. And you're paying up, what is that, 20% or something like that on top of it? Who in their right minds would do that?
Nobody.
And why?
And nobody's doing it, by the way. And
why would Musk put a price tag of 420 on there when...
This is pure and simple stock manipulation. He should be arrested.
Yeah. So the big question, as you mentioned, SEC is now looking into the possibility of fraud or market manipulation. And then, you know, of course, the other side is, oh, poor Elon. He's under so much pressure. That's another thing. If you were looking to go private and you had funding secured, why would you be working 24/7 building tents to meet these numbers of 5,000 cars per week that you put out for yourself? Talking about squeezing the shorts. The problem is that all the things that he did was clearly aligned with someone who is looking just bitterly at, because it is the most shorted stock. It is the most shorted stock in the market. This is a guy who has a vendetta, and rightfully so. If he owns the company, he doesn't want the shorts taking him down.
No, of course not.
But he's doing everything he can in the public light to provide information and prove that it is an ongoing concern that would be very profitable long term. They just got to basically turn a corner. They don't need funding. They're going to turn a profit the third to fourth quarter. They're meeting their demand in terms of sales, and of course their, you know, their production numbers. And he was all excited. He tweeted, "Oh, look at this! We turned out 5,000. You know, we met our goal: 5,000 cars per week. And you know, now we're a real car company." He said, "I mean, you know, these things don't line up with a company that was potentially going private."
Not at all.
Except for maybe
at 420,
right? Except for maybe he's having some kind of a, is it possible he's having some kind of a break?
A nervous breakdown is the old word that you're looking for.
Yeah, he's having like a psychological break and he just cannot take the pressure of the public markets.
Well, he's got his, you know, yeah, that's exactly what it might be.
So at all costs, he'll just say, you know, he's thrown in the hat and say, forget it. But I do believe that there is, well, we know that usually the SEC and the enforcements are, so what? They pay a couple $1 million for this. And, you know, he would have thought, well, so, you know, I'll pay $10 million. Who cares? I drove the stock up. I made $1 billion on it. The problem is the stock has come back down and below the price when he tweeted this, the magical tweet. So I don't
know. Okay. How high did it go when he tweeted? Was that 389 mark?
Yeah, it was about 389.
Yeah.
So, I mean, then the questions come in about the funding. By the way, on Twitter, there are a lot of people talking about different things. Like, you know, they mentioned something in blank secured. You know, they've been using, a lot of people have been joking around.
I didn't notice this.
Oh, yeah. They've been joking around with this all over the place. You know, funding secured. And they'll come back, you know, they'll, you know, I don't know what they said, but something secured, this secured, you know, kind of making fun of him, a lot of it. So...
Funding secured.
Yeah, he's talking about Saudi Arabia, the Saudi investment fund, a private.
They could buy it.
They could, but why would they at that price?
$60 billion. They have $60 billion. I think this is the market cap laying around.
They have a 5% position. They don't say they're involved in it. SoftBank possibly, but probably not. There was,
That's not what SoftBank does.
And Saudi, I think, has a big position in GM in their auto driving or their autonomous driving units. I don't know. Now, all of a sudden, the board of directors has formed a special committee to evaluate the consideration to taking the company private. By the way, one other thing. Do you think that if the company was going private, that somehow the board of directors would have been brought into the discussion before they were alerted to the funding secured?
You think?
Yeah, something's not right. Something stinks. Well, good news. I want to mention on a better note, something that I think is really this is a proud moment in American history. The Russian Foreign Ministry said just this weekend that has made U.S. actor Steven Seagal its special representative for Russian U.S. humanitarian ties. A role it said was meant to deepen culture, art, and youth ties between the two countries. So they basically have an actor whose entire spectrum has been breaking wrists with incredible amount of strength and killing people. Bad acting, by the way. Terrible acting. But a big guy that just goes into a room and just with his hands basically kills people. And they're making him its special representative for U.S. and Russian humanitarian ties. It seems a little... It's
mind-boggling.
Seems a little off.
He's not the only guy. There's some other actor or some celebrity who became... he's a Russian. They gave him Russian citizenship. There's somebody else besides Seagal that's achieved this for some unknown reason.
Like we got LeBron, not LeBron, in Korea. Rodman. No.
Who?
Rodman, Dennis Rodman, with Korea.
Oh yeah, no, but that's not right. No, I'm thinking of Russia specifically. I can't remember who it is.
But it's just so weird that there's so many possible people you could think of being a special representative. It's just bizarre.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Yeah. Let's see here.
I'm just the cook.
Yeah. Right, exactly. That was a good movie. Ride sharing. Taxify, an Estonia ride hailing company. Now, before I tell you about this. So we've talked about the bike sharing in China. So there's three different and unique bicycles for ride sharing, which are all over the place in China. There are these bikes everywhere. There's a yellow one, there's an orange one, and sometimes a blue one.
Mm. And you been to China before this trip?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, but there's been a lot of changes. A lot of, when this is Shanghai also versus the South.
I've been there enough times that I've talked to people say they go there four times a year, and they say every time they go, there's a lot of changes. Yeah. So I gave up on trying to track anything.
Right. So so in China they have these bicycles everywhere. And there's a yellow one, an orange one, and a blue one. So I said, what's the difference, And what they have is they have a locking system on the back wheel that has a QR code, and you put your app that is for that particular bicycle company, that bicycle sharing company. And you pay for your time, and it gives you a code. You press the code, and this lock that locks the back wheel just releases. And you just take your bicycle and just do your thing. Everybody likes the orange bikes. They're a little bit more expensive, but they like the orange bikes better because they do not have traditional tubes in their tires or a solid wheel. It seems like the yellow ones consistently get broken down. They get holes in their tires.
Huh.
So they're big on the orange ones because of the solid rubber wheel.
It's going to be a tough, hard ride.
Yeah, you get your bicycle, and you ride around for a while. You drop it off anywhere and just leave it.
Yeah, it's the same thing with the scooters in San Francisco and some bicycle systems, and same with in Seattle. They're all over the place. San Francisco confiscates them if they see them laying around, and then charges $150 to the company to get them back. They're seen as litter.
It is. It gets well, but there, there's just so much junk. I mean, there's guys on trucks picking these things up all over the place and then fixing them. But anyway, and I did ride in a Didi. I got one ride on a Didi, which is the, you know, everything in China is like, you say, well, what's Didi? Oh, that's the Uber of China. Oh, what's Baidu? Oh, that's the Google of China. Well, what's Alibaba? That's the Amazon of China. You know, they have all these things that are the whatever of China. That's how they describe everything to the Westerners here. Anyway, Taxify, an Estonia ride-hailing company aiming to take on Uber in emerging markets, will invest millions of euros in East Africa in the next 5 years with a strategy focused on motorized rickshaws.
Those little three-wheeling things that they have all over India and Indonesia?
Yeah, I think they call it in Vietnam, they call them tuk-tuks.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, what's next? What's the next? You know, where are we going?
I don't know. We keep missing out on one thing after another.
I think we got the potential for some area, maybe camel sharing.
Ooh, you might be onto something there.
Camel sharing. I think that, you know, it's a mode of transportation in various places that are desert regions, such as Morocco. You know, a little camel sharing thing here. Just park your camel anywhere.
Get pretty good cell tower coverage to make that work.
Yeah, yeah. Piggyback sharing. I mean, I figure somebody's going to come out with a thing that, you know what, I'll give you a ride in my back. Just pay me for it. And have an app for that. Piggyback sharing.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is going to be weird stuff, sharing stuff. I asked about the umbrella sharing.
Curious, by the way, curious, none of it's sharing.
Right. It's use. It's rental. It's rental.
It's a wrong use of a term.
Well, there's so many. Listen, how many times have you heard the word ratchet? We talked about this, right? Describing something that's disgusting, something that's filthy and dirty, ratchet.
Yeah.
Ratchet is like a wrench.
I know what a ratchet is.
You never heard the word ratchet?
Yeah, I never heard it used for disgusting.
Oh, yeah. The kids use that. Ugh, it's ratchet.
I think they meant wretched. I can't pronounce it.
That's exactly right. Yep. Let's see here. Odd fact. 1 in 8 divorces are due to student loans. This is a report out of a company called Student Loan Hero. More than a third of borrowers said college loans and other money factors contributed to their divorce, according to a recent report. 13% of divorcees blame student loans specifically for ending their relationships. I really don't understand this. So you get into a relationship, you go to college, you get all rack up these student loans, and somehow you're, what are you, constantly coming home fighting? Oh, your student loan is more than mine. I'm not paying. You're a doctor, but you have all these student loans. I'm not supporting you for the next 5 years until you can start making money. I mean,
Yeah, exactly.
Very shallow.
I think your little scenarios, they're exactly what happens.
Very shallow. Very shallow. President Trump is calling for a boycott of America's iconic motorcycle brand, Harley Davidson, if they move some of their manufacturing overseas. So I got to ask, though, how do you feel about the U.S. government targeting a U.S. iconic company for doing what they can to make as much money as possible for the company? I don't get it.
You're talking to the wrong guy. I think it's nuts.
I mean, isn't it?
I mean, but the way Trump operates is just the way Trump operates. And it's like, you know, you got him in there, and this is going to be the case for however long he's in there. And you have to adapt to it for a while.
So it's okay to make
money.
He's
badgering companies. This is not the first president that's done that, by the way.
Yeah. But this is supposed to be a very business-friendly president.
Doesn't mean he can't badger companies.
I don't know where he gets, though, by calling for a boycott. Is that even legal? I don't even know. Calling for a boycott of a U.S.-based company.
It,
if they move some of their manufacturing overseas due to the fact that it's much more expensive here.
There may be some legal implications here. You might be onto something there.
Isn't the whole idea of
thing called an illegal boycott?
Isn't the idea of lower taxes to entice companies to stay here and for companies outside of the U.S. to come here and do business here?
Yes.
So it's okay to bring companies here. This is protectionism. Straight up protectionism. You can't say it's not protectionism.
I could say it's not protectionism, but it probably is.
Oh, all right. Well. Kroger stock gets a pop when the news story breaks that it will be selling products, specifically groceries, through Alibaba. A new way to get a stock to pop, by the way, is just to mention it's doing something with Alibaba.
I want to relate a story now that you mentioned this. Mm-hmm. China has all these Amazon-like operations and kind of a direct marketing business that's huge. Yep. But they don't have the delivery infrastructure except just a bunch of, characters on their bikes and other – they don't have like we have here. We have UPS trucks going up and down the street and FedEx trucks going up and down the streets. One say FedEx Hot Home. So somebody said – how do you get your packages in it? This story could be bullcrap. I wish I was thought about it before you went. They have these places where they just drop off like thousands of boxes of packages. And it's crawling with people rummaging around for their package. And when they find their package or they see a neighbor's package, they pick it up too. And when they go home with their package, they drop the neighbor's package off.
I mean, I guess that's possible. I mean, I just watched a documentary on some of this. And in the big cities, they're using bicycles and all that. But I agree, when you're going to the outskirts and the more rural areas, it's much more difficult to get things. So, I mean...
So it seems to be like a community... these kind of systems don't work over time.
No, they'll build more abilities to connect through trains, through planes...
Oh, no.
Maybe the rickshaws.
The whole thing's crazy.
Yep. Finally, Intel revealed another potential security flaw that could allow illicit access to data.
Another. Mm.
Yep. If you want to make sure that your data is protected, by the way, one of the ways you can do that is donating to the show. I've heard from a lot of people that when they do that, somehow they get a lot of – you don't think so?
Yeah, no, I think it's absolutely true.
Yeah, a lot of security, all sorts. I mean, you get personal security, you get
really make
protection.
Out by donating.
Yeah, it's a crowd favorite. And if you do donate to the show, this episode number 419, I got to bring this up in the beginning of the shows from now on, but episode number 419, you can get a shirt if you pay $419, which the price does escalate. We have a constant inflation gauge that goes on here. If you donate $419, you get a signed DH Unplugged t-shirt signed by myself and John C. Dvorak.
In a spectacular envelope. You should have seen the last one that went out.
I didn't see the last one that went out. You're supposed to send me pictures of those.
Oh.
Did you get a picture?
No.
Well, maybe do that in the future.
Yeah.
Just think, because maybe you don't know. Maybe those pictures will become collector's items.
Could be.
You know? Anyway, please do us a favor because there are a lot of things that we spend money on for ourselves and for the show. But if you do want to help us out, you maybe had some luck with some of the things we talk about, some ideas that popped here, some education that you got, some good thoughts, feelings, etc. Hey, do us a favor. Go donate. Any amount is appreciated. There's a donate button over on DH Unplugged. $419 is really appreciated for this show. So, and for those of you, just get ready. I may be blowing the show, but for those of you that are potheads, the next show is number 420.
Oh.
And that
the 420 t-shirt, that's got to be the thing to have.
Yep. The 420 t-shirt. So if you want a 420 t-shirt, that's next show. Although, if you give us 420 now, we'll still send you a 420 t-shirt. We'll just wait a week.
Yeah. No, that's exactly what we're going to do.
Yeah. So if you want to get
on everybody wants the 420 t-shirt.
Yeah, exactly. And We'll run it over a we'll send it over and fly it over a marijuana field in Mexico.
No, we won't.
We won't do that. No, we're just kidding about that. But we will get you a 420 collector's item T-shirt that says DH Unplugged. It's black. It'll be in your size with our signatures and autographs and whatever you call those. So do that.
And a big number 420 written on it.
Yeah, 420. We have to pick up a close to the pin, which we'll do that next week. Okay, a couple other things here. North Korea appears to be building. I got this news story when I was over there. It made me feel good. North Korea appears to be building one of two new liquid-fueled intercontinental ballistic missiles at a factory that produced the country's first missiles capable of reaching the United States. So much for that crap.
Yeah, I don't know if these stories are true until they launch them.
Yep, we have no. Well, okay, we'll wait. Wells Fargo, back in the hot seat.
Well, what is with these guys? How come these people are still in business?
Yeah, they're not back in the hot seat. They never got out of the hot seat. So now they're in the midst of refunding customers for products, including pet insurance and legal services that they didn't understand or know how to use. The bank is refunding tens of millions of dollars for the products, which were added to hundreds of thousands of accounts. I mean, what's next? Dental insurance? Yeah. You had dental insurance. Yeah, you didn't know you're paying $3 a month for your dental insurance? Yeah, it's a Wells Fargo thing. It's unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Yep. Seems there's some dog training going on that is targeted to hate Democrats. A 33-year-old woman says that she was bitten in the leg by a U.S. Secret Service dog during Vice President Mike Pence's visit last week to Michigan. Melissa Ramirez says she was outside the Amway Grand Plaza Hotel in downtown Grand Rapids on Wednesday when she was bitten. She told the company she was at a bus stop and the bite lasted maybe a second, but it was long enough for the dog to get its teeth into her pretty well.
Yeah.
I'm pretty certain she's a Dem.
Yeah, I would probably.
Two more things. Cryptos, have you been watching the cryptocurrencies?
Yeah, no, you're talking to a guy who doesn't care.
Boy, they're getting crushed. I mean, with a capital crushed, a kiboshed. Yeah. Bitcoin slashed through 6,000, a quick recovery there. Ethereum's at like 260 or 257. All the coins, the altcoins, are just getting absolutely obliterated. All that whole run-up, that gigantic run that we saw, let's say, November, December of last year, and then into January, February, March, and then the slow creep down has been totally eroded. So Bitcoin went to, what, 18,000, 17,000, 18,000?
I have no idea.
Ethereum was like 1,500. Now it's at 260. I mean, some of these things that were like 100 are now back at like, you know, $22. It's bad news. And a lot of this is due to the Tether question, this Tether scandal, and whether or not it's actually being backed properly. And even though this is the case, Coinbase is still opening up 50,000 accounts per day.
Ah, blockchain.
Yep. And finally, I saw a piece in the Wall Street Journal today. It was talking about India fashion. You know, making a big splash. And it looks the same to me, by the way. But
India, yeah, it looks like the same stuff they were wearing in the 50s. But right. We probably don't have the eye for it.
Right. But this particular one, there was a series of pictures in the Wall Street Journal magazine. There was a series of pictures of all these different outfits and things, okay? This one caught my eye. This one you have to see. If you listen to me, you have to go over to DH Unplugged, scroll to the show notes of episode number 419, scroll to the bottom, and click the button that says India Fashion. What do you make of this?
I'm looking at it. I'm just pushing the button as we speak. Does the goat come with this outfit?
It's a goat.
The aroused goat.
Is this a weird picture?
Yeah.
This is like the picture that would go for the No Agenda newsletter.
I think I'm going to save it and put it in the newsletter.
Yeah, this is India fashion at its best. Naked goats and red women. Little nipple action there, too. This is very odd. That odd hat that looks like it could be used to carry wheat or something.
Yeah, the hat is definitely something to look at.
Hmm. On a bench. Lady laying down on a bench looking like, frankly, she's about to get mounted.
She's looking. I was about to say a similar joke. And then my joke was going to be looking like she's waiting for the photographer to go away so she could get mounted.
Very weird.
Yeah, they're very, very. It's lewd.
Yeah.
I would recommend people not to look at this.
This could be very damaging. And then the goat eating with the neck up eating like it's an ecstasy. On the hind legs.
Said enough.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of No Agenda, you can listen to John C. Dvorak and Adam Curry Thursdays and Sundays at 12 on the No Agenda show, where they deconstruct all the news that you need to know about in a way that you haven't heard before. Not to mention that these guys somehow, when they get on that show, can tell the future.
We do predict the future quite a bit.
Yeah. So take a listen to the No Agenda show at, noagenda.com?
Noagendashow.com.
Noagendashow.com. Streaming live or on your favorite podcatcher. What is John C. Dvorak writing for PC Magazine this week?
Well, I saw a couple of pieces floating around because of this recent Facebook and other social networks kicking Alex Jones off their so-called platform to attack the whole idea of any of these things being platforms in the first place. These are publishing houses that should be held accountable just like any other publishing house. They're not platforms. A platform's a PC or a Mac or something where software is put on it and operating systems put on it and then other things run under it. Facebook, for example, is just social networking software that runs under a browser, which is more software that runs under the Windows or Macintosh operating system and goes to the platform, the actual platform, which is the PC. But for some reason over the years, this idea that these are neutral platforms that are not responsible for anything that's posted on them is a scam. And my point that I make in this column coming up, I think it runs tomorrow, is that when somebody is libeled, for example, on Facebook, you should be able to sue Facebook.
Yeah.
Well, right now you say, oh, is there nothing to do with it? Oh, no, this you got to go talk to the person who wrote that up. No. Facebook is responsible for what they publish. They just seem to have gotten away with faking the fact that they aren't responsible. But they have editors. They have people looking to take stuff off. They just, don't do a very good job of it.
I don't know. The whole Facebook thing is too much to bear.
It won't even be hard to bear if they just redefine them as what they are, publishing companies.
Yeah, that's right. You are correct. All right, let's get to the stocks, the weekly game that we play. It's not an offer to buy any securities. It's not a recommendation to buy or sell anything either. It's just a simple game that we play, ideas that we come up with, things that we think are interesting, and we kind of track them. You can find all this on dhunplugged.com under the weekly stock picks. John C. Dvorak, myself, Horowitz Company clients, may own any of the stocks that are suggested or talked about in this game that we play, and that will be duly noted. Also, if for whatever reason you decide that, hey, that's a good idea, I think I'm going to do that, well, do us a favor and research it thoroughly. Find a professional financial advisor that can guide you through this. It's risky at best. We take no liability for your stupidity.
There you have it.
Yeah. Let's take a look. Why don't you walk us through?
Well, let's see what we've got. First of all, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 stocks pulled off the list, including one that just showed up last week.
Yeah, it was bad.
It was your gold mining thing, and you bit the big one.
Yep.
1 week.
Yep. Yeah, 2 weeks, but yeah.
2 weeks, okay.
It was probably pulled off.
Also, Intrexon got pulled after it bounced up a little bit, and then I guess collapsed, and so I lost on that. That was a buy. Apple short, which was one of mine, somehow I guess went up too high and then came tumbling down
That's a question I have.
I was short.
You were short.
So it was going down and then it went up and I got kicked off at 6% loss.
Right.
I also got kicked off of Tesla, which was another short, but you see all the reasons why that is. But I didn't really lose anything. That was dead money coming in and out.
Right.
I lost 0.09%.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, the other one that was pulled off, which was another one of mine, which was a long for Biogen, bounced. It finally started going so well. I ended up with a 28% gain after it was kicked off after a 10% loss.
Yeah, which means you're probably
that made up for the other ones.
Yeah.
That's my theory.
Biotechni is still up 18%. That's yours.
Yeah, Biotechni is good. And you have yours that is really working well is still the Twitter short.
Yep.
Which is the only short on the left on the board.
Yeah, that's a good point. Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, markets are, even though they get a little weak here and there, they seem to just bounce back at every occasion.
Yeah.
So still a very strong market, but, you know, like I said, we're the only house on the block right now that looks good. The rest of them are not only not looking so good in shambles, some of them are on fire. I mean, there is definitely some fire on the block.
No kidding.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, what do you have for this week? I don't have anything. What do you have?
I do. I have something at Sigma Labs. I think it's Sigma Labs. Let me get there. There's a bunch of Sigma companies. Let me get the right one.
Yeah, Sigma Design.
Yeah, Sigma. This is the one that this is the rare earth operation. Oh. They have a lot of I'll tell you how I got around to this one. It's a penny stock. It's a 95 cents is something, should be the price. I think it's SIGB or something. I'm going to get it. Hold on. Sigma Labs. SGLB.
SGLB, got it.
It's 92 cents. After hours, up to 99. They're big in erbium.
Erbium?
Yeah.
What is erbium?
It's one of the rare earths. It's one of these. This is one of these companies that has a rare earth. If you want to play rare earths.
But what is it used for?
Oh, erbium is used to dope a fiber optic cable.
Dope it.
Yeah, so you get some of this into the glass, and it makes everything work better. And that's my understanding. I don't know that much about it because fiber optics is like a whole out of this world materials game. And erbium is a big player in it.
Is that with
an I just got fiber. I got fiber to the home.
Yeah.
They just finally put the cable. I haven't got the completely rigged fiber to the home, not the bull crap fiber that AT&T sells, which is fiber somewhere and then they give you a Ethernet cable. This is fiber to the home from Sonic local operation for about $50 a month.
Wow.
Gigabit, I think. I don't know. But I started looking up how to optimize it when I finally do get the gear in here. And then as I discovered erbium, started looking around and Sigma Labs looks like they got something going on.
Is that with an E or a U?
What?
Erbium. Or an H.
I think it's an E. Have you tried looking it up?
No, I'm lazy.
Erbium. I think it's, yeah, E-R-B-I-U-M. And erbium. They have something called, you can find the erbium doped fiber amplifier.
Oh.
Erbium lasers, erbium YAG lasers, erbium oxide, which I think is the chemical that they do for all these things, erbium laser resurfacing. There you go.
Wow.
So I'm thinking, hey, everybody's going to have fiber shortly. So let's, it's ER is the symbol, the chemical symbol. And it's a white solid metal.
I wonder where you get that from. I have to look at that. It's interesting.
Yeah.
The things you learn here. Pretty impressive. Yeah,
four elements. Did you know that four elements named after the small town of Yitterby, Sweden, are erbium, terbium, yttrium, and ytterbium? Ytterbium. There you go.
Is that where it's from?
I don't know. I don't know where it's from.
Good question. They just picked the town.
We have a minute? No, we really don't, but let's have a quick look. Where is erbium found? There's a mine in Sweden. That's one place where it's found.
Well,
That's how it got named.
Erbium. Well, something if you happen to get on Jeopardy one day, now you know. If you want a dope fiber.
What is erbium? Yeah.
If you doping fiber, erbium. All right. Very good. I will see you next week.
Okay. See you then.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.